Hi, this is Ben Trefney, news director at KALW. We're in a membership drive right now. You can support what we do. More than 70% of our funding comes from listeners like you. Please go to donate at kalw.org, click it, and keep these stories coming. Thank you.
KALW.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now we're proud to present the premiere of the new season of David Boyer's documentary project, The Intersection.
This season of The Intersection could not have been made without Google. More specifically, Google Docs, Google Mail, Google Maps, Google Scholar, Google News, Google Books, Google's YouTube, Google Bikes, and Google Search. These products were integral to the production of this podcast. But to be clear, I received no financial support from Google. In fact, they refused to talk to me. The views expressed by their employees and subcontractors are their own and do not represent the views of Google. And now, season two of The Intersection.
Behind those houses is Google, the building out that gate is Google, the building out that gate is Google, like everywhere around.
Google doesn't endorse people living in cars. They would rather we go get an apartment somewhere.
What we have to deal with in Mountain View are really the perils of prosperity.
I think what makes this a crisis is there are no good choices.
Welcome to The Intersection, a series that looks at our changing world one street corner at a time. This season, we're heading to Mountain View in the heart of Silicon Valley. Over the next six episodes, we'll get to know the people who live and work near the corner of North Shoreline Boulevard and Space Park Way, which is smack in the middle of Google's sprawling headquarters in Mountain View. We'll look at how this intersection has changed since the days when the valley was full of orchards. We'll explore the cause and effect of too many jobs and not enough housing. And we'll hear about the controversial plans to completely remake this neighborhood. But first, we have to get there. We begin in San Francisco, near my apartment in the Mission, 34 miles from the actual corner. That's because transportation, getting there, is a huge part of the story. As you'll learn this season, it drives practically every city planning decision, and plenty of personal ones.
Is this where the Google bus stops?
Yeah.
Bus is coming. Hi there. So I'm trying to get down to Mountain View. I have a meeting and I'm not a Google employee. Is it possible to...
No, I'm sorry. I can't.
No?
It's only Google employees.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sorry.
That's okay. Hey, Siri.
Yes?
How do I get from here to Mountain View?
Getting directions to Mountain View.
It's 7:45. Without traffic, the trip is about 45 minutes. But according to Siri, this morning, it could take up to an hour and 40. And mass transit, well, that's over 2 hours. I want to be there for the morning rush, which peaks around 9:30. I just don't have enough time for the bus and the train. So, like a lot of commuters, I head for my car, knowing it will not be pretty.
Okay, and away we go. I mean, it is nothing but traffic. Hey. Got my first beep for being a terrible driver.
So why am I going all this way? What's so special about this intersection? Well, what's happening at North Shoreline and Space Parkway impacts what's going on at corners throughout the Bay Area. And it really epitomizes the challenges facing so many cities around the world that are dealing with swelling populations. Traffic's just one of the challenges they're struggling with. And today, so am I.
Oy, 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 the people coming from the other direction, there is a ton of traffic. That is a nightmare. Now I'm right behind a Google bus. Boy, these things are big. This is mind-numbingly boring.
903.
Okay, we are getting off the Shoreline exit.
Traffic is a mess all over the Bay Area, but it's particularly messy in North Bayshore, the neighborhood that we're heading to. Every weekday, the population here balloons from less than 1,000 residents to more than 20,000 workers. And the neighborhood is basically a cul-de-sac, a triangle cut off from the rest of the world by this highway, as well as the Bay to the north and Moffett Airfield to the west. It doesn't matter if you're coming from San Jose, San Francisco, or downtown Mountain View. Most people heading into North Bayshore will pass through the one traffic light that's about 1,000 feet from here. And that is the definition of a bottleneck. Today, it takes me 7 minutes to get from the exit through the light, which, thankfully, is just a couple of blocks from our destination.
And we made it to the corner. So it took about an hour and 30. Oh, okay.
So, if you've ever been to a concert at North Shoreline, you probably drove right through this intersection. And you probably didn't even notice it. Visually, it's standard-issue suburban office park with all those two-story gray boxes. On our corner, only a bar and a gym break up the monotony. We'll spend plenty of time here this season, but today, I'm walking a few blocks back to the highway off-ramp. With microphone in hand, I'm basically panhandling for comments from folks stuck at the light. Most are on their way to Google.
Hey there. Doing a story on commutes. How's your commute going?
I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of trying to check an email. There's too much going on right now.
So you're driving? What do you mean?
Well, I'm at a stoplight, so I feel comfortable
doing it. I'm only kidding. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
This is pretty normal, actually. About 9:15 all the way until about 9:45, it's like this. It's backed up, what, a quarter of a mile or so, all the way until the red light.
Do you have any other options besides driving?
I could take the bike, but I'm just not that in shape, so yeah.
I came from Gilroy, it took 2 hours.
I'm actually not commuting. I'm coming from Los Altos and I'm taking a Pilates class right around the corner. It used to take me 10 minutes to get here and I have to pretty much count on 20 to 25 because I never know how bad it's gonna be.
I come from Sacramento every day. In the morning time it takes 2 hours, then in the afternoon it takes 3.5 to 4. I've been doing it for 2 years now.
Do you have any other options?
No, I like working for Google.
How do you deal?
Patience.
Oh, you go.
All right,
thank you.
Somewhere along the way, this became normal. It's no longer remarkable to commute 3 hours a day. It's just part of the price of living in the Bay Area. But how did this happen? And how can we fix it? To start, we're going to talk to an expert who spends her days, and probably some sleepless nights, trying to figure out how to make it better.
My name is Ratna Amin. I'm the SPUR Transportation Policy Director.
SPUR is an urban planning think tank here in the Bay Area.
Probably for many years, the neighborhood functioned fine. But then a few things have converged. One is a significant amount of job growth all in the same area.
Plus, each employee needs less and less room thanks to laptops and smartphones, and the fact that now nothing's being manufactured here.
So a building that may have had 1,000 employees might now have 3,000 employees. It used to be okay for all those people to drive to work, but when you triple the number of people in the same space, it just doesn't work anymore, and you need a new system.
Or at the very least, you've got to expand the system we have to keep up with the amount and location of growth. Just in the last decade, 400,000 jobs have been added in San Francisco and Silicon Valley. That's an increase of 25%. At the same time, the affordable housing crunch has scrambled where people live. So now, there's really no such thing as a reverse commute. These days, traffic patterns are more cat's cradle than straight line.
We do spend a lot of transportation money, but over the decades in this part of the region, it hasn't added up to enough.
It's also a total clusterfuck trying to navigate the Bay Area's utterly disjointed mass transit system.
It's because we have many, many transit operators who don't have an incentive sometimes to work together.
In New York, for example, the public transportation system serves about 3 million commuters a day. And there are really just three major operators. In the Bay Area, which serves just under 500,000, there are more than 10 operators. That means that you're not just transferring between, say, a bus and a train. You're transferring between totally different systems. You need to pay a new fare for each, and because the schedules aren't coordinated, you may be waiting a while to make that connection. I learned this firsthand another day as I make my way from San Francisco to the intersection for an interview. I join hundreds of other commuters on Caltrain's Baby Bullet Express, which, just for the record, isn't particularly small or fast.
From my house, I take my scooter to Caltrain station, because if you take Muni, it's gonna add like half an hour. And then when I get over there, we wait a couple of minutes for the shuttle, and then that takes us to the company. Door to door, it's 2 hours each way.
So the last time I used Caltrain was in the mid-90s. What I remember is that the three stations in San Francisco were in the middle of nowhere, which is still kind of true, and that the trains were cramped, loud, and dirty. But the train that arrives is a spacious two-decker. On board, it's clean, comfortable, and full of light. I can see why more and more people are choosing to commute this way.
Caution, the doors are about to close.
I've been taking this for 6 years, and the trains have gotten longer and so much more busy. I mean, especially in the past 2 years.
Next stop is Millbrae. Our next stop, Millbrae.
You can see this, but I'm sitting here knitting, and that's how I pass my commute. It's kind of meditative.
Is it just typically this quiet on here?
Yes. I see lots of people doing work on laptops, and not very many people talking to each other.
How about you?
It's kind of pricey. One of the reasons I'm taking the train now, though, is I now have a Go Pass through work. They've basically paid for your ride for the year.
Next stop is San Antonio. Our next stop, San Antonio.
I definitely prefer Caltrain. Where I work, it's right off of the train line, so I just walk across the street. I work on the Google self-driving car project.
Mountain View, now arriving Mountain View.
I meet five other Googlers on the train who work at satellite offices close to mass transit. They could take the Google bus, but they choose the train because it's more predictable and they don't have to deal with traffic. But the overwhelming majority of Googlers work at the Googleplex in North Bayshore, far from public transportation.
Caution, the doors are about to close.
Last year, Mountain View City Council commissioned a traffic study which exposed just how dire the situation is in North Bayshore. So get this. More than 18,000 people commute into the neighborhood during the morning rush. Guess how many were using any form of mass transit? 171. And how many were driving solo? Nearly 11,000. Ratna Amin from Spur is pretty sure she knows why.
I don't think there's a mystery here. People are making rational choices based on actual cash price of transportation and time price and inconvenience price.
It's hard to quantify the inconvenience price, but it costs $20 round trip to go back and forth between the Mission and Google on mass transit.
I think what makes this a crisis is there are no good choices. You can sit in traffic all day. You can have a somewhat inconvenient transit trip. You can't necessarily afford to live near your job. What that means is our highways and our roads are filled with cars that are making 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 mile trips.
No doubt it was unintentional, but in many ways, Google created this problem. Like Facebook in Menlo Park and Apple's new campus in Cupertino, these companies chose to move and grow in a suburban spot away from mass transit. At a 2010 city council meeting, the man who was in charge of Google's real estate back then explained how and why the company ended up in North Bayshore.
I'm George Salah. I've been with the company since the company was founded pretty early on. We were in downtown Palo Alto. If you were hungry, you walked out the front door and you went for sushi. If you wanted to go home, you walked down the street and within a block and a half, you're at your apartment or your home. So there was a life style that was there in place, and there was 40 people. It was not realistic to have that continue. So we tried to find locations where we could recreate as much of that as we possibly could.
And so, in 1999, with the budget and bullishness of a startup, they moved their 40 employees from a small office above a bike shop in Palo Alto to much grander digs in North Bayshore.
Why did we select that building? Well, it had a cafe that was already in place. It had a small workout facility. It had, you know, nice little amenities. And it was a building in the middle of nowhere, in our opinion, and would allow us an opportunity for growth.
It seems naive in retrospect, but could Google have anticipated the problem of being in the middle of nowhere?
Yes, they should have known, even back in the 90s, that they shouldn't have put the office where it is. My name is Roger Rudick. I'm the editor of Streets Blog San Francisco.
Streets Blog is a news site that advocates for better transportation in the Bay Area.
Look, in the 90s, we had terrible traffic problems. In the 70s, we had a gas crisis. Remember that? So you have to think about how your employee is going to get to work.
When George Salah met with founders Sergey Brin and Larry Page in 1999, he asked about their five-year plan. Their response, we want to be half the size of Yahoo. Salah recounts this meeting in the book In the Plex about the company's rise. They're mathematicians, he explains. They knew exactly what was coming. And 5 years later, Google had 2,000 employees.
You got to look at the potential for growth with transportation in mind. You can't just say, well, you know, go build your office in the middle of the Mojave Desert. There's plenty of land there and it's cheap. You got to think about where those transit lines are already located.
Google shuttles, where do they fit into that?
The tech shuttles you're talking about, they're trying to make lemonade out of lemons and give their employees a more comfortable ride to and from the office.
Google declined to make a representative available. But last year, Director of Transportation Brendan Harrington talked to Russell Hancock about the company's transportation initiatives on Inside Silicon Valley.
For our employees, the commute has become a big part of their day, and it can impact their ability to get their work done. And that impacts our recruitment, our retention. It impacts employee well-being. Now, an interesting thing is that the shuttle program wasn't necessarily the company saying we needed to do this. This was more of a grassroots beginning. The origin of the program started with individuals within Google, you know, regular workers that said, this is something that impacts me and I want to do something about it.
And one of those individuals now works with the Intersections radio home, KALW.
My name is Carrie Spivak, and in 2002, I created the Google Shuttle. There were probably between 200 to 300 people back then. A lot of our employees lived in San Francisco, and we would all get up very early in the morning to try and avoid traffic. And then on the return trip, we would all leave Mountain View really late, mostly after dinner. The door-to-door of that trip took a long time. That time adds up. That's time that you could be with your family. And so I thought to myself, would it be possible to create a place in San Francisco where people could all come and then go directly to their office? And you were allowed to work on an independent project that took up 20% of your time back then. And I was given approval and funds to pursue this project. So I hired a bus. I sent an email to the whole company, but there was no way to know that people would actually buy into this idea. And in fact, that was one of the big concerns that the executive team had. You know, Sergey thought people will not leave their cars behind.
But this time, Sergey was wrong.
By the end of the pilot, it was apparent that this was a very successful idea. We'd have people waiting in line for the bus and we'd run out of seats. And so people wanted more shuttle buses. They wanted shuttle buses that were more convenient to where they lived as well.
When Carrie started, there was just one bus that carried 24 people. It made two pickups intentionally on the outskirts of San Francisco to avoid city traffic. According to Google's Brendan Harrington, they now pick up employees in all 9 Bay Area counties.
We're well over 200 buses, closing in on 250. So on our busiest days, we're carrying over 8,500 people each way.
With the popularity of Google buses and the fierce competition for talent, other tech giants like Facebook, Apple, and Yahoo began to offer the same perk about 10 years ago. Now, there are more than 800 of these private shuttles transporting more than 34,000 people on any given day. And with cushy seats and Wi-Fi on board, companies can often get a few extra hours of work from employees who'd otherwise be driving. This is by design, according to Brendan.
We've created a work environment within the shuttle so that you can work comfortably on your laptop. I'd say maybe 2/3, sometimes even more of the folks are on their computers. We don't make you work, but we make it easy for you to work if you choose to do so.
Not everyone has been gung-ho about these private shuttles, especially in San Francisco, where from 2013 to 2016, protesters took to the streets to voice their opposition. This was like catnip to the mainstream media, including PBS NewsHour.
The national battle over inequality has taken a curious turn in the San Francisco Bay Area, where buses carrying high-tech workers have become a symbol of the divide.
They're unmarked and with tinted windows, so you don't know who's inside.
The real issue is gentrification and the systemic displacement.
What's really happening is that people who have lived here two, three, four generations are being thrown out on the street like garbage.
Google Shuttle creator Carrie Spivak never imagined there'd be a backlash.
The initial goal was so benevolent. So when I started to read newspaper reports and hear stories about how the shuttle was the reason that our society has declined, I was surprised.
What surprised me is that what's considered a problem by many in San Francisco is considered an indispensable solution by most in Mountain View. And that includes Randy Suda, the head of Mountain View's planning department.
To imagine the alternative without those shuttles, I mean, it's a frightening scenario to think about. I mean, it's tremendously successful from the standpoint of reducing the number of people on the highways. You know, it's an interesting example where the financial resources of a corporation can essentially fill the gaps and try to make up for some of the failures in public transportation.
The city and tech companies know that employee shuttles alone are not a long-term solution. So they're working together to make biking safer and easier in Mountain View while realigning streets in North Bayshore to improve traffic flow. They're also studying more Disney-esque alternatives like monorails, people movers, and a system of driverless pods. But as transportation expert Ratna Amin points out, this is not a problem that Mountain View or Google can solve on their own.
It's so large that you need large solutions. Because you're solving for a regional transportation problem, people coming from really, really far away.
No surprise, most in the region are supportive of anything that might alleviate the soul-crushing commutes and congestion. And in the 2016 election, Bay Area voters approved more than $10 billion in new transportation funding. But money alone isn't the solution. You see, no one can force cities to do what's best for the entire Bay Area. The Metropolitan Transportation Commission, for instance, can draw up great regional plans, but it's up to each city to decide whether or not to adopt them. And let's say they do. Well, progress can be downright glacial. A relatively small improvement, like a dedicated bus lane into North Bayshore, has been in the works for more than 2 years and will take at least another two to design and construct.
Our track record for doing big projects in the Bay Area is decades. There have been studies since the 1980s about how to turn Caltrain from a traditional diesel commuter line into something better, something electrified, but it takes a long time to build consensus.
This summer, Caltrain finally broke ground on that project. There will be faster, more frequent service up and down the peninsula. But it's not going to be completed until 2021. Transportation advocate Roger Rudick can't believe it's taken this long.
We've been talking about it for many decades. And look, you know, on the East Coast, they electrified the Northeast Corridor, I think it's 90 years ago.
It's only a century, geez.
Let's just do this already. I mean, it's so basic. And to see the center of technology for the country and all these people who work and develop our new phone systems and our computers and all this great technology riding around on lumbering old diesel locomotives belching out smoke, it's just like, what have we done to ourselves? I mean, we're currently building a high-speed rail system, but we're talking about a system that the Japanese have had since the 60s, the French have had since the 80s. We really, really need to get this stuff into the modern era.
Somehow, Ratna remains optimistic. Well, sorta.
I think it's possible that something really unexpected is going to happen and shake some things loose here. Maybe a technological breakthrough. Maybe we figure out how to make automated buses work really beautifully. And suddenly we have buses running everywhere all day. And that's a game changer. And I think we should be hopeful that something like that happens, because with our existing toolkit, it's going to be hard.
If it were easy, someone would have figured this out a long time ago. But the problem is that it's not just about a broken transportation system. It's about a 9-year battle to shape this neighborhood. It's about people who live in RVs but work at Google. It's about nostalgia for the past and the allure of the future. And this season, we'll cover all of that and more at the corner of North Shoreline and Space Parkway. Thanks for listening to the first episode of the season. KALW will be airing the rest of the new season this fall on Cross Currents. The Intersection is a production of KALW. I know you know this, but projects like this don't just happen. This one was made possible with a grant from the San Francisco Arts Commission and from California Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Until next time, I'm David Boyer, and this is The Intersection.